So my topic tonight is generosity, and it's one of those feel-good topics. We could talk about dukkha, but, you know, dukkha should be known. There's a way to even hold dukkha within generosity. Actually, I would say that it might be an expression of generosity to open to our own dukkha, right? How is it an expression of generosity to open to our own dukkha?
Caring about our pain.
Not denying it. I was thinking about this one aspect of it. The term I've heard recently is our shared humanity. That pain is a condition of being born. I think any sentient being, it's one of the conditions of existence is pain. And that's one way that we can connect. Gosh, I'm not supposed to be talking about dukkha. But, you know, one expression of generosity, you know, I recently had an experience with a loved one who had pretty serious cancer. And I felt, you know, as soon as I heard about it, I felt like I had just joined a whole nother club. Don't we? When anything like that happens to us, it's like, you know, one of the first reflections is, wow, this makes me a part of a group of people that I, you know, might have reflected on or felt some empathy for, but wow, we get to sit in their seat for a while. And it gives us an opportunity to have even a deeper connection. And, you know, I think practice gives us that opportunity. I'm sure many of you have the experience of opening to your suffering, but holding it within a field of tenderness. Holding suffering within a field of compassion. And compassion actually feels good. So it's two things are happening in our heart and mind at the same time. It's an interesting experience. But on to generosity. So we know that, Susie and I actually just did a week of teacher training at the Insight Retreat Center in Santa Cruz, California with this really excellent teacher, Gil Fronsdahl. And we actually studied concentration the whole week, but I thought that, you know, one thing about concentration, about jhana, particularly deep states of concentration, that the suttas say that you have to be generous to get into jhana. And that if you have stinginess in your heart or a pretty big pattern of stinginess in your life, it's very hard for you to get concentrated. Isn't that interesting? But anyway, so we know what I wanted to say. Susie and I were talking about concentration, and one of our fellow teacher trainees said that concentration is the third most used word in all of the suttas. Isn't that interesting? The first most common word is the Buddha. The second most common word is the Dharma. The third most common word, according to her, is concentration. And I'm assuming that generosity is right up there in the top five. You know, there's a huge amount of references to the virtue and qualities of generosity in the Buddha Dharma. And I just want to talk about some places that it shows up and how it's really fundamental to what we are practicing. So one place that it shows up is that in the suttas we know that there's something called the three pillars of Dharma, or three pillars that allows us to do merit-making. And those pillars of the Dharma are generosity, or dana, moral restraint or sila and meditation, or actually bhavana, which consists of just heart and mind training. And generosity is really fundamental to how we train ourselves. In Asia, where, you know, this practice, this wonderful practice, you know, essentially there are spiritual grandfathers and grandmothers, actually meditation is the last thing that people learn or how they practice. The first thing they practice in their Buddha Dharma, in their practice of their spirituality, is generosity. You know, one way that's expressed in Asia is, you know, we know that the monks, in at least in Thailand and in Burma, go around and actually get their meals from the local community. And oftentimes you will see that the small children in the family, the family members will actually give the food for the small children to place within the bowls of the monks and the nuns. And, you know, this is their very early training in generosity. One of the things that this does is it, you know, begins the practice of letting go and non-attachment. And this is what, you know, when we sit on our cushion, and I'm sure when they sit on their cushion, you know, they have that openness of mind and spaciousness of mind that really does help them in their meditation practice. So in addition to being one of the three pillars of the Dhamma, generosity is also the first parami, the first perfection that we all train in as well. We know in the Tibetan tradition there's six paramis, and in our Theravadan tradition there's actually 10 paramis. And generosity is the very first one. It's really fundamental to training our heart and minds. Essentially what we're doing is we are conditioning our heart and mind, or this heart and mind, to be as close to what an enlightened person looks like. They say that, you know, enlightenment is is bestowed by grace. You know, it's essentially a little bit of an accident. But practicing generosity makes us accident prone. So in as one of the paramis or perfections, when giving or generosity is perfected, it is selfless. There is no measure of gaining or losing. There are no strings attached and no expectation of thanks or reciprocation. The giving is gratifying of itself. Giving in this way loosens the grip of greed and helps to develop non-attachment. Such giving also develops virtue and leads naturally to the next perfection, which is morality. So practicing generosity is a way to water the seeds of letting go in our heart and mind. You know, letting go of attachment to things. I'm sure many of you probably know about the Abhidhamma, which is one of the three baskets of Buddhist teaching. And in the Abhidhamma, you know, many of you probably know that there's only really 52 things happening at any time in our heart and mind. There's 52 mental factors, and generosity is one of them. And I love the way it's actually very scientific. You know, the Buddha, you know, is thought by many to be the first psychologist, right? So the Abhidhamma actually has the mental factor and then these different characteristics of it. So in the Abhidhamma and the mental factor of generosity has the characteristic, or is thought to have the characteristic, of relinquishing. Its function is to dispel greed for things that can be given away. So when you give, it is essentially counteracting our tendency to be greedy. This is really interesting. The manifestation of generosity is non-attachment and the achievement of prosperity. So generosity is thought to be the proximal cause for prosperity to arise. I think that personally I can attest to that. I will admit that, you know, I have some paramis. I think I actually have the parami of generosity, though I am so still working on it. And I'm going to tell you, I have more money than I ever thought I'd have. Not that I have so much, but I, you know, it's interesting how that worked out. And then what is the proximal cause of generosity? The proximal cause is an object that can be relinquished. And it's, you know, more than just an object. It can be more than just an object. So it can be more than just an object. Another way to think about generosity, that it's an intention in the mind, an intention to be generous. I love this little saying in the Anguttara Nikaya. Even if a person throws the rinsings of a bowl or cup into a village pool or pond, thinking, may whatever animals live here feed on this, this would be a source of merit. So that means that we could essentially do most of our daily activities and consider how it could be an act of generosity. I mean, if we did this, we would be training all day long in generosity. We'd be watering the seeds of spaciousness of mind, of non-attachment, and we would be pulling the weeds of our greed and our delusion. So more on the Abhidhamma, generosity. There's an element of renunciation in generosity as well. So here is another bit of the Abhidhamma on its characteristic and salient quality. Like the water that runs off a leaf without adhering, so generosity runs off sense objects without adhering to them. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine of walking through, you know, the best department store, or depending on, you know, what our attachments are, the best car dealership, you know, the best place that has the objects of any of our individual wanting, and just being able to walk through it and have all of the objects be like water that runs off a leaf without adhering. It just sounds like so much freedom. The function of generosity is non-grasping or overcoming greed. How it presents itself, according to the Abhidhamma, is detachment, non-attachment to the objects of offering. And again, you know, it is productive of wealth and prosperity. And then the proximal cause of generosity is that there exists something that we can offer. I wanted to talk a little bit about the mental factor of loving kindness, because generosity can actually be an expression of loving kindness as well, can't it? A lot of the positive or beautiful mental factors actually can arise together in our heart and mind. So loving kindness can arise, and generosity could be its expression, or compassion can arise, and loving and generosity could be the expression. So non-hatred or loving kindness is the mental factor. And its characteristic or salient quality is mildness and forgiveness. Its other salient qualities are promoting the welfare of beings and a lack of ferocity, a lack of aggression. The function of loving kindness, this is interesting. According to the Abhidhamma, the function of loving kindness is to remove annoyance. I could see that. The manifestation of how it presents itself is agreeableness and removal of ill will. And then, of course, I'm sure many of us know the proximal cause of loving kindness. What's the proximal cause? Seeing the lovableness of people. So I wanted to give you what the Abhidhamma says about the opposite of generosity. And, you know, generosity is the antidote to these mental factors that are the source of a lot of suffering for us. You know, we know that the Buddha taught that essentially there's three root poisons that, you know, are the motivation of a lot of our actions of body, speech, and mind. And when our actions of body, speech, and mind are motivated by these three root poisons, they are going to end. It's going to end in suffering for ourselves and suffering for others. And that's what this practice is. You know what the antidote to all of that is? Wise attention. And what is wise attention? It's mindfulness. And so we already have, you know, everything that we need. We have all of the ingredients. So, in the Abhidhamma, the 52 qualities, three of them are actually associated with greed. There's three manifestations of greed in the Abhidhamma. The first is, of course, just plain old greed. Other names for that are desire or passion. What that looks like or what are its characteristics are craving, attachment, grasping at an object, attachment or desire to what we like. And the function or the task of it is sticking. And they use the analogy of meat thrown into a hot pan with no oil. You know what that's like? It really sticks, doesn't it? It's not a pretty sight. And then how it manifests, the way it presents itself is not giving up. So not giving up anything. And the proximal cause is, what's the proximal cause of greed in our mind? It's seeing enjoyment in things leading to bondage. Or not understanding. That's kind of a heavy-handed Theravada way of saying that. But another way of saying that is just not really thinking that there's more satisfaction in the things that we're attached to. You know, do we have anything? Do we own anything that is giving us any ultimate satisfaction? It might make us happy for a day, 10 days, maybe even 10 years, but ultimately, the teaching is that there is no conditioned thing that has ultimate satisfaction in it. It's not possible. All conditioned things are unsatisfactory. So the second manifestation of greed in the Abhidhamma is wrong view. This is a really important one. Its characteristic, or you know, what it looks like, is an unjustified interpretation of things. And what is its function? Its function is to have opinions. How many of us have opinions? It's to guess at things, to be presumptuous, to know what we think something is. Its manifestation is wrong interpretation or belief. And the proximal cause of it, this is really interesting. The proximal cause is not to see that enlightenment is possible or that awakening is possible. It's to not know that.
And then finally, the third manifestation of greed in our minds is something called conceit, or mana in Pali. And this is interesting. I recently had the incredible, fortunate opportunity to teach the People of Color retreat. I think it was at Spirit Rock. And we had a lot of people. You know, it was a People of Color retreat. And, you know, we can feel a lot of victimization. And a lot of that is totally understandable why we would feel that way. But that victimization is part of mana. Because mana is, you know, mana or conceit is not just thinking that you're better than or being arrogant. It's also having just, you know, having a lot of thoughts or actions of body, speech, and mind that specifically deal with how you're equal to everybody else, or in many cases, how you're not as good as everybody else. I think even in Western psychology, they say that it's almost that anyone who has really very bad self-esteem, actually, it's almost impossible to have a huge amount of bad self-esteem and not have the occasional thoughts of delusions of grandeur that go with it. You know, it's just another form of, and you know, this is the extreme version of it, but it's a form of narcissism, of just being so self-focused, so self-focused. So conceit or pride mana is the third manifestation of greed within these 52 factors. And, you know, its characteristic is better than, worse than, or equal to. And how it functions is self-advertisement. Boy, I am just really do that a lot. I think that there might be a gene because my whole family does that. It's like, let me tell you what great thing is happening to me right now, or what great thing I just did. Being boastful or arrogant is actually a manifestation of conceit. The way it presents itself is having an inflated opinion of oneself and a disrespectful attitude towards others. And this is interesting. So this conceit or mana, many of you know that there's 10 fetters, right? All humans are thought to have 10 fetters. And, you know, there's 4 stages of enlightenment. And with each stage of enlightenment, a successive fetter is cut. And it's not until you reach full enlightenment, arhatship, that the fetter of mana or conceit is cut finally. So it's a tough one. So I wanted to talk a little bit, you know, being, you know, I'm a professor at UW, and what did I do when I decided to do a talk on generosity? I wanted to see what the science had to say about it. So of course I did a lit search, and I actually found this wonderful website that I want to tell you all about. It's actually my alma mater at UC Berkeley. It's they have a department within their psychology department called the Greater Good. So if you, many of you, I see shaking your heads, we like it, right? The Greater Good at UC Berkeley. So if you Google Greater Good and UC Berkeley, you will find it. And they actually had quite a few articles on what the science of generosity is. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that. And I wanted to say, when we had our sharing about how the practice was showing up for us, one thing that has really been true time after time after time after time is that the Buddha Dharma, the richness of the Buddha Dharma, the explanations within the Buddha Dharma are just so much richer and more thorough and resonate really on a felt level way more than what the science does. The science is just really seems to be at a very developmentally earlier level than what we have in our Buddha Dharma. And, you know, that's one of the ways to gladden the mind, is just to reflect on how rich this is. So it actually makes me happy to see that. So I wanted to point out this one new book. There's this new book out there about generosity, and it was named one of the best books of 2013 by Amazon and by the Financial Times and the Wall Street Journal. And it is on the ultimate arbiter of Goodreads. It is on Oprah Winfrey's list of what you should read. The Washington Post says it's the best book of 2013. And the title of the book is called Give and Take, A Revolutionary Approach to Success. And it's by Adam Grant, who is a professor at the Wharton School of Business. So this is really interesting. All of our science of mindfulness and happiness and really what contributes to a meaningful life is making its way across all of the disciplines in an interesting way, I think. So this is what Adam Grant does. He actually has two books out called Give and Take. The first one is A Revolutionary Approach to Success, and the second one is something, it's Give and Take : something. One was published in 2013, and one was published this year. And what he does is he talks about the science of the impact of generosity in business, or just a review of this quality within the business setting. And it's interesting. I also found that there's something called TGT. Many of you probably know what TGT is. Tit for tat, TFT, tit for tat. And, in game theory, when, people are exchanging, economic theory, they have this idea of tit for tat. But Adam Grant actually compiled this research and found that within the field of business or social scientists, that's how you make something credible in our culture, social scientists say that there's actually three interaction styles related to generosity within the work environment. So you can reflect and see which one of these three that you are. There's the takers. And takers want their interactions to result in a net gain for themselves. And I know you're either saying, am I like that? Or you're ticking off people you work with who you think are in that category. The second category are the matchers. And the matchers feel like they can give as long as they get compensated on a quid pro quo. So that they're the tit-for-tat folks. And then there's a third category of personalities within the business environment who are the givers. Givers want others to benefit whether or not they do themselves and will act generously towards others without expectation of reward. So these are three categories. And what do you think that they found out? Who do you think is the most successful in the business environment? The givers, that's exactly right. The givers are more successful. Why are the givers more successful? Because they have superior networking. They have more collaboration. People want to collaborate them more. They have actually better evaluation skills because there's something about having a generous heart and mind. This is interesting. So having a generous heart and mind and not clinging, not having that conceit, remember, because generosity is a counterbalance to conceit. If you don't have that conceit, what would that mean? That you're way more open to evaluation and feedback, right? So you don't necessarily have to guard yourself and maintain your sense of self. And they have much more influencing skills, these givers, this third type, the givers. And that they will come out on top. That's what the research says. Another interesting finding of this research is that if you have a giver within a work environment, it actually prompts other people to give. I think that's really beautiful. What does that mean for us? That means that we're inspired when we see gifts. Oh my gosh. I'm sure that the gift of this hall inspired people. Do you remember when Sims actually was trying to raise $75,000 and they raised it in one
month. I just thought that was the most amazing thing. That's really so beautiful. So being around givers inspires people to give. But of course, money is not, you know, money is not the only thing that can be given. You know, I'm sorry if I'm expressing a lot of giving in monetary value. There's a huge amount of other ways to give as well. And I'm hoping to get at some of those before we close for the night. You know, the science has other tips for giving. Two of the tips, and you know, if you go to this website, you'll see what they are. They're, you know, they're things that you could probably come up with yourself. Launch a personal generosity experiment. Join a community of givers. Practice power. So there's two that I really liked. One that I want to bring to your attention. One was practice powerless communication. It's an act of generosity that if you're with a group that may be, and you know, you know what we call it is taking up a lot of room. If you take up a lot of room in a group, this one social experiment that's in this book, the person who actually realized that they took up a lot of room, and it was actually someone in a leadership position in the environment, they decided that at any meeting, they would only take up 20% of the talking time. I think that's an interesting goal for ourselves. And actually this person found that, or this experiment found that it was actually quite beneficial. And then the other strategy for being generous in your work environment or maybe outside of your, maybe you could do it in your family environment too, was start a love machine. There's something in actually in businesses now or in workplaces where people, it's actually a peer recognition system. And it's an opportunity for the peers to point out the good qualities of the people that they work with in ways that maybe higher ups may never have the opportunity to learn about. And actually there's a system that you could start, you know, there's a website for you to start, that's a free website. And the website is sendlove.us. I just like the website. www.sendlove.us. And two other things before I open it up to the wisdom of the wonderful Sangha, and that is two things that really struck me about the research was that when someone is generous, oftentimes, you know, if I do a generous thing and someone says thank you, I'm always like, oh, don't worry about it, it was nothing. But actually they say that you shouldn't do that. You should actually really sit with and appreciate, because someone is giving you a gift. Someone is being generous for you, to you in that. And you should just sit there and say, yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate you saying that. So you should not brush off thank yous for generosity. Or probably thank yous for anything, right? We should really just be open to that. And that's a bad habit that I'm going to start working on right now. Another one was to accept the generosity of others. It's so funny, this little thing here was, you know, the little bullet point in on the website, The Greater Good, which is about the research, said that generosity in many ways is an expression of love. And it's so interesting how many of us have a hard time opening up to expressions of love. What is that about? It's interesting. So we might reflect on that. And I wanted to give you one place that I see greed in my mind all the time. It's a little teeny thing, but it is in my mind a lot. And that is around my Keurig coffee maker. I have a lot of greed. Why? Because I have three kinds of pods, right? I've got the Safeway brand of pods that I got on sale. I've got my Tully's pods. And I've got my Pete's pods. And it's like when company comes over, it's like, will they notice that I'm not giving them the Tully's or the Pete's pods? Well, think about it. When you're serving someone, how do you decide who gets the best piece of fish? It's interesting, isn't it? I think, you know, I was practicing with my teacher, Joseph Goldstein, once, and I was during an interview, and I was telling him that I was having jealousy, and he said, oh, well, then you should practice mudita, you know, sympathetic joy, the opposite of jealousy. And I said, will that make me less jealous? And he said, no, but you will know when, you will know immediately when jealousy arises. So I think that that's what we do when we practice generosity as well, is that it sees, it really shows us the places that we're not generous. Because we are all, we are totally fooling ourselves, I think, just about how good and generous and wonderful we all are. Anyway, I have like 10 pages of notes here. I could keep going, but I wanted to open it up. I know there's always a lot of wisdom in the room. So pith, do you remember when, I remember the first time I gave a Dharma talk at Sims and Aura Cuevas was in the room, our beloved sister Aura, and I said, is there any pith wisdom? And somebody said, what does pith mean? And Aura, of course, she had it down. She knew. She was, you know, an English professor, so she knew what pith meant, which means just the essence of the idea. So does anybody have any pith wisdom around just generosity that they'd like to share? Or how it makes them feel, or good in the beginning, good in the middle, good in the end? Laura? My Keurig coffee maker?
I work in a race every year up in the mountains, and so people come in, and I'm making coffee, and I was thinking about that. I had a little hand press espresso maker that I would make for my people, but then if somebody running in the race came in, do they get the Folgers instant coffee? Because they're going to go off and run, they're not going to know. But it was slow enough that there was somebody sitting there for a while. This was a 100-mile race, and they were at mile 80, so they were sitting there for a while. And I thought, well, I'm going to have to give up some of my good beans.
It does.
And it was, and then they were so grateful. They kept talking about how wonderful the coffee was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's like when you reflect on the sense of scarcity that comes from wanting to hold things, it's totally not the case, you know. If you want another pound of that good coffee, you could have it. You know, that sense of scarcity is really not reality. That's right. Actually, some of the suttas, you know, they have different definitions, but some of the suttas actually say that patronage is not generosity. So to give with some expectations is not generosity. Yeah, tit for tat, that's right, tit for tat. Well, that's great. So you know exactly what you need to work on. And practicing like Saddha Uttejaniya, we open up to that and, you know, make sure that our attitude towards our defilements are loving and open and like, wow, that's interesting, rather than, you know, beating ourselves up. I mean, it's like beating ourselves up for breathing. It's a shared humanity thing. If we can open it up and accept it with kindness and compassion for ourselves, what a wonderful, generous offering that is to everybody else. Yeah, we don't need to judge ourselves for that at all. Thanks for sharing that. Other pithy things? Exchange. Yes, absolutely. And it's a way to decondition that conceit, right? It deconditions that conceit. That's probably one of the things that was the cause of that separation. That's so beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Steve?
One cutlery I've been working on. I've got my sort of larger circle of people. Persons who have addiction issues.
Oh, yeah.
And so, man, it's a challenge because on the one hand, if you, you know, express generosity in a certain way, nothing's coming back because that it makes sure others that they're sucking stuff. And then if you try to do, you know, sort of tough love and have it be actually loving and not just tough or angry, that's really interesting. So, man, it struck me what a gift this is. Funny kind of way, actually in a real kind of way, because it's pretty easy for me to be generous in normal circumstances, but this is like 100-pound, 200-pound, you know, barbells. And I know that there's a place where you can, where kindness can completely be there, generosity can be there in that situation. I sometimes imagine the Buddha or Dalai Lama is next to me, and then I see what they do, and it's very different from what I'm doing. And so it's really been a gift. I mean, kicking and screaming gift. Because there's some stretching there to be done, and it's a lot, you know, it's a lot harder than just normal generosity with normal loving people.
Right. So, that's an excellent point.
Yeah.
So. And I'm going to tell you, I actually had a presentation in my class. This is probably getting a little bit too sciencey, but on harm reduction. And, you know, you can, you know, they've actually have a special house in Seattle where they give people who are still on drugs and alcohol a place to live. And within 6 months, they dramatically reduce their drugs and alcohol when they feel like their basic needs are met. So I think that even expression of generosity in that situation is probably for their benefit. And, you know, they're, you know, not necessarily running out and using it for drugs and alcohol. It's hard, though. Actually, the science, this is interesting. To be honest with you, I think the science, even that all of that generosity in business, is not necessarily right view, right? It's, you know, somehow motivated by us having a superior situation at work. But I do think that one of the things to consider is you know, offer, who we do offer to. That's one of the things that they talk about in the suttas, is who, you know, there's different levels of merit that you get by offering dana, by offering generosity. And of course, offering dana to, and I don't want to say this because it's going to be very self-serving, people teaching the Dharma. Or actually to enlightened beings is the most meritorious. And the science actually says that, the business science said, you do need to be careful who you're generous to within that business environment, because, you know, the takers are going to totally have your number and be there for you. And that's why I love Sangha, because you know that people showing up are at least really trying to work through all this stuff. I mean, I say it is a easy thing to be generous to any Sangha activity or anything. It's such a wholesome thing. Because they will, you know, they're going to be like the tamale and the tire iron. You know, people are going to pay it forward. One last one, yes?
Well, I was thinking about what your last comment there, but because before that I was thinking about, you know, just kind of the mindfulness of what's going on. I mean, you know, just bearing witness to, you know, the real suffering in the neighborhood, and that makes it a little bit easier with distinguishing between the takers and those who could really need your generosity.
Mm-hmm. So mindfulness or wise attention is one of the mental factors, the 52 mental factors, and wisdom always accompanies, is actually the highest expression, or, you know, it's actually the last of the 52 mental factors. And mindfulness is always accompanied by wisdom, by right understanding, if you're, you know, really in the zone of mindfulness. Because there's no, you know, there's a lot of equanimity in what's going on. We're seeing with a lot of equanimity. We're understanding the shared humanity aspect of it. So yeah, wise attention, mindfulness is really the most wonderful. It's, you know, I mean, we're practicing here. It's a wonderful benefit to ourselves and everyone. So I wanted to end with this one quote from it was a quote about, I don't have the quote. It was actually by Mingir Rinpoche. Do you guys know who Mingir Rinpoche is? He's a very young Tibetan monk. And what he said was, I'll try to paraphrase it, it was so beautiful. Actually, it was a quote about that there really is a no, you know, there really is not a self. The self is essentially created when we grasp. It's grasping, you know, it's grasping and wanting other than it is, that is where the self is created. And this one quote was about, you know, not having a self and living in the society that we live in actually makes us really anxious. It actually is a cause of a lot of anxiety. Another great Buddhist teacher, David Loy, says the same thing, that our anxiety is actually us not surrendering to the fact that this permanent, everlasting self doesn't really exist. And Mingir Rinpoche says that in order for us to reduce this anxiety, we try to grasp to things. Not understanding the impermanent nature of things is that we try to create identities by just having this thing and that thing and this thing and that thing. And that just really spoke to me. He said it way better than I did, but you get the point. So before we close, I think we have a couple announcements.